Hey, peoples, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast. I'm your host, Mick Raven. It is Sunday, the 21st of April, 2024. This is a review covering alternative news and events. Call +61 02 8006 1918 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or podomatic.com and get with the D program. Now, I did say last week that I'd have a problem this weekend because of the visit to the dreaded dentist, but that was all okay. It only went for 2 days, so I was fine midweek. But now I've got something else, people. The missus caught COVID, okay? I know, the dreaded lurky that we thought had all gone away. She got out the rat test, 2 tests, both positive. And here I was hawking around going, well, I don't catch it. I've not been jabbed. I'm immune. And what happens yesterday, Saturday? Well, actually, it was Friday night, late. Started feeling not too good, people. By Saturday, I was a zombie and taking the Nurofen and trying to recover from the chills, the headache. The same thing I had a few years back when I caught a really bad dose of it, whatever it is. Now, they're calling it the flu. And the rat test can actually detect anything. So we don't know if it's COVID or the flu or whatever they want to call it. So basically, I did the test and it was positive, and now it's Sunday and I'm still recovering, but not as long. I didn't take as long to kick it. But still, I thought I'd soldier on and do the podcast and see what we can come up with, see if we can. And I do know also, too, people, that I haven't got all the stories up. There's something like 20 stories I've got to get up that I've talked on the podcast in the last 3 or 4 weeks, probably a bit longer. Haven't got them up. I haven't had time to update the website. I know the website is not that important. I do understand that, but I do need to keep, for my own reference, these stories on the site so I can go back to them and look at them. That's really what it's for. But just so you know that it will all eventually go up, everything I've spoken about, just for reference points, as long as a lot of the links don't get broken. Now, a lot of the stories I actually cut and paste so they never get lost, and we've got archive.org at the moment that can go back and look at websites, URLs from the past, sometimes 20 years, depending on the site. And that's a real bonus. I remember when my website was attacked and I lost a couple of pages. Now, it's a WordPress site, so it's easily attacked. And I remember 2 whole pages went down and I lost probably about 8 or 9 years worth of links, because both the pages that were hit were just pages. They weren't the main post page, the main page. And I lost access to them. I don't know whether it was WordPress or I was hit by something. I don't know what it was, but they were gone. But luckily, because I went to archive.org, it actually does a snapshot of all the website in real time at the time, in a calendar type event where they will actually do a screenshot, but it's actually a workable website. It's not just the front screenshot of the page, it's the whole website workable from that point. So you can go back and rebuild, and that's what I did. So on the media tab, and most of the tabs I've not updated for obvious reasons, as I just said before, I just haven't had time. And so a whole year on the media tab is virtually not there because I haven't really updated anything. But that's it. I mean, a lot of the tabs there are not that important. The health one, the tech one are pretty important, and the world news sometimes. But the other ones, the chemtrails, New World Order, humor, and media, not as important. Now, that doesn't mean they're any less important. It just means I haven't had time to update those particular tabs, but they're still important. There's still issues with chemtrails. There's still issues with the New World Order, of course. I like to keep the funny page going because I do like a laugh like everybody else. But the media pages, that was one of the pages that were hit years ago, and I never really got it back to its full potential. But I realised that, you know, a lot of people haven't got time to go flicking through something from 10 years ago to find a story back then. You can actually do it a lot easier in the search bar. So if you go to the search bar on conspiracyoz.com and you put in a subject, just a simple word, and it will bring up all the links for that anyway. So then you'll get what you're looking for anyway. Because they are barring a lot of sites from the past, and a lot of links are getting broken. I mean, you remember when YouTube decided to cancel out a lot of people, and then suddenly all the YouTubes didn't work. All the links that you'd saved, none of them worked. They're all gone. Anything they labeled anti-government or anti-COVID, they were gone instantly. So that's a danger. I mean, you're using the devil's tools. So you have to expect that that's going to happen. That's why I try to avoid Google and using anything to do with them, because I understand that they want to see what you're doing, and then they can give you the chop when they want. They'll wait till you've built yourself up on your digital soapbox, and then they'll kick it out from under you. Simple as that, because it's funny for them. It's funny to do this to people. I mean, just on the subject of WordPress, I've got three Wikipedias from it. Not a big deal. WordPress.com, that's the one I use. And you've got Matt Mullenweg, he's the guy that started it, something like 18, 19 years ago. And then you've got Automattic, the company that was formed. And you look at it and you think, well, this guy is controlling millions of people's view, just like Elon Musk is controlling Twitter /X and the other globalist elitist, the, what's his name, Mr. Facebook. Everyone knows who it is, that guy. I was going to say Marcus Aurelius, people, but it's actually Mark Zuckerberg. He did try to resemble a Roman emperor at one stage, but that's another story. But still, these are individuals that control millions of points of view. That is very dangerous. They can just turn you off at any time with no access. And they have done it to many, many, many people with a point of view. And they always say, it's all the right wingers, it's this, it's that. But they have the power to do it, people. That's the point I'm trying to make. They don't like what you're talking about. Just turn you off. Very simple. And they'll tell you to go and use another platform. But we all know those platforms are very, very popular. And that's the problem. It's whack-a-mole for them. But one day it might turn into a central sort of system where you can go on a forum and blogs, but you have to go through a central system. It's a bit like in Australia where we have to go through the NBN, the National Broadband Network. We have to pass through another modem from our ISP's modem to get to what we want, which means they can possibly access that and see what you're looking at, because you've got to go through them to get to it. When you use a VPN or when you encrypt it, they can't. And they don't like that, people, because then they think you are doing something illegal. So in the future, they may ban VPNs and encryptions at both ends. They might do it, people, simply to say, well, you've got nothing to hide. Why are you doing that? And see, this is the issue of privacy. We have to hang on to it. The moment we decide privacy is not important, that's when that'll happen. And then you're done. You can't converse with anyone, and it's like 1984. You've got to write hand messages, put them in people's hands when the cameras aren't looking at you. It could get that stupid. I wouldn't be surprised. But that's why you've got to hang on to cash and privacy. You've got to hang on to those two things we've always had. We've always had both, and now they're trying to get rid of them. It's good to see that cash is on the rise, which it is, and the banks are trying desperately to close the branches and the ATMs by saying no one's using them. And yet it's the same amount of people that have been using them for 20 years, and they want to continue using them, but they're finding it harder and harder to do it. At the shop, I do see more people using phones with cards on them now than ever. But the cash till is rising. So there's a bit of a fight back there. There's people that, when they come in and pay cash, I say, use it or lose it, they agree, and that's all you can say. But it's a lot of them are like, you know, blokes in their 50s and 60s that I don't trust anyone, and they're gone to it. The younger people are all using the phones with the cards, and they don't think twice about it. But that's where it's heading. Once you hand everything over to these companies, and then these companies get acquired by globalists, well, go figure. So anyway, just a heads up on WordPress if you're using it. When it started, it says here, the website opened to beta testers on the 8th of August 2005, so you can see how long it's been going for, and opened to the public on the 21st of November 2005. It was initially, wait for this, it was initially launched as an invitation-only service, although at one stage, accounts were also available to users of the Flock web browser. As of February 2017, over 77 million new posts and 42 million new comments are published monthly on the service. Did you hear that, people? Monthly. Now, wait for this. In September 2010, it was announced that Windows Live Spaces, Microsoft's blogging service, remember that, would be closing, and that Microsoft, wait for it, people, would partner with WordPress.com for blogging services. Did you know that? Did you know Billy McGates put the hand out knowing that WordPress had won that one? In February 2024, Automattic, that's the company that owns WordPress, announced that it would begin selling, wait for this, people, user data from Tumblr and WordPress.com to Midjourney and OpenAI. So all the stuff we talked about, all the blogging, everything, comments included, have now gone to an AI. Do you understand what that means, people? This thing will eventually sift through what everyone's done and start kicking them off the service if they go against what the AI has been instructed to look for. This is extremely dangerous. Did they ask me? No, I never got any email saying we're giving your information freely away to two other companies. No, they didn't. So OpenAI, let's go to that. You know who that is. That's the one that was in the news with Elon Musk saying he's pulling out because they're not doing what he wants. Very dangerous. So it says OpenAI is a US-based artificial intelligence research organization founded in December 2015. Researching artificial intelligence with the goal of developing, this is why Musk left, safe and beneficial artificial general intelligence. Now, that's a big word. General intelligence is much more serious, okay? It says, which it defines as highly autonomous systems that outperform humans, funny that, at most economically valuable work. So you get sacked. As one of the leading organizations of the AI boom, it has developed several large language models, advanced image generation models, and previously released open source models. Its release of ChatGPT, which a lot of people are using, especially the youth, has been credited with starting the AI boom. And on it goes. But this is it. This is where you understand now. These companies don't care about their users. They are now trying to profit. And it's supposed to be a non-profit beginning. This is AI. So this is when Musk said, hang on, you guys are trying to up the dollars. I don't like that. That's when he did the... I'll see if I can find it. He'll say why he left. One sec. First of all, I'll just show you what happened. 2019, the transition from non-profit. Here we go. Microsoft again, people. 2019, OpenAI transitioned from non-profit to capped for profit, with the profit being capped at 100 times any investment. According to OpenAI, the capped profit model allows OpenAI, Global LLC to legally attract investment from venture funds and, in addition, to grant employees stakes in the company. Oh, so nice. Many top researchers work for Google Brain, DeepMind, Facebook, which offers stock options that a non-profit would be unable to. So it says, before the transition, public disclosure of the compensation of top employees at OpenAI was legally required. Now, here we go, people. The company then distributed equity to its employees and partnered with Microsoft, announcing an investment package of $1 billion into the company. Since then, OpenAI systems have run on an Azure-based supercomputing platform from Microsoft. Did you know that, people? And it's got OpenAI Global LLC then announced its intention to commercially license its technologies. It planned to spend the $1 billion within 5 years and possibly much faster. Altman, that's Sam Altman who started it, has stated that even $1 billion may turn out to be insufficient and that the lab may ultimately need more capital than any non-profit has ever raised to achieve artificial, and here it comes, general intelligence. Very dangerous general intelligence, people. It's much more severe than just the normal artificial intelligence. It's very, very invasive. That's what they want it for. The transition from a non-profit to capped profit company was viewed with skepticism by Oren, looks like Etzioni, of the non-profit Allen Institute for AI, who agreed that wooing up top researchers to a non-profit is difficult, but stated, I disagree with the notion that a non-profit can't compete, and pointed to successfully low-budget projects by OpenAI and others. If bigger and better funded was always better, then IBM would still be number one. Oh, that's a very good point, people. The non-profit OpenAI Inc. is the sole controlling shareholder of OpenAI Global LLC, which, despite being a for-profit company, retains a formal responsibility to OpenAI Inc.'s non-profit charter. A majority of OpenAI Inc.'s board is barred from having financial stakes in OpenAI Global LLC, and in addition, minority members with a stake in OpenAI Global LLC are barred from certain votes due to conflict of interest. Some researchers have argued that OpenAI Global LLC switch to for-profit status is inconsistent with OpenAI's claims to be democratizing AI, which it's not. So this is where you realize, people, that Musk and Sam Altman, they saw what was happening to this idea of artificial intelligence. And of course this was going to happen. Of course Microsoft and they were going to jump in and try to get rid of them, because then they can control it. That's very, very obvious. So it says here, On November the 17th, 2023, Sam Altman, this is the founder, was removed as CEO when its board of directors composed of Helen Toner, Aya Sutskever, Adam D'Angelo and Tasha McCauley cited a lack of confidence in him. This is a guy that invented it. Chief Technology Officer Mira Marathi took over as interim CEO, and it says Greg Brockman, the president of OpenAI, was also removed as chairman of the board. So you can see what happened here, people, and resigned from the company's presidency shortly thereafter. So there you go. And it says three senior OpenAI researchers subsequently resigned. So there, I'm not going to go into this, but you can see a whole bunch of people walked. And Microsoft, then it says, on November the 20th, 2023, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella announced Altman and Brockman would be joining Microsoft to lead a new advanced AI research team, but added that they were still committed to OpenAI despite recent events. So you can see a big spat happened. But then they went to Microsoft anyway. So it doesn't matter which way we look at this, something happened. And now they want to try and make dollars out of ChatGPT and all the other ones. And that's exactly what's happened. And this is when Elon Musk said, I'm out of here. So I'll just get to that. And it says here, this is at the bottom of the, oh, I don't know if it's at the bottom. Let me have a look. This is about the Elon Musk thing. Oh, yeah, it's quite a long Wikipedia, so I'm not going to go into all of it. But anyway, it says here, where is it? On February the 29th, 2024, so only a few months ago, OpenAI and CEO Sam Altman were sued by Elon Musk, who accused them of prioritizing profits over public good. Contrary to OpenAI's original mission of developing AI for humanity's benefit, the lawsuit cited OpenAI's policy shift after partnering with Microsoft, questioning its open source commitment and stirring the AI ethics versus profit debate. It says in a blog post, OpenAI stated that Elon understood the mission did not imply open sourcing AGI, that's artificial general intelligence. In a staff memo, they also denied being a de facto Microsoft subsidy. It should have said minion in brackets. In March 11, 2024, court filing, OpenAI said it was doing just fine without Elon Musk after he left the company in 2018. So he knew back then there was a problem coming. And it says they also responded to Musk's lawsuit, calling the billionaire's claims incoherent, frivolous, extraordinary, and a fiction. So that's it. Cat's out of the bag. So this is who WordPress's data was sold to. Now you can see the danger. Microsoft there again, Billy McGates rubbing his hands together, controlling the world's strings. And just as a side note, I'd like to quietly say this because I don't want the missus to hear, but she's actually been jabbed. Everyone around me, and there's not many that haven't, have all been jabbed. So I'm not catching it straight off the bat. I'm catching it off people that already have been jabbed. I just thought I'd put that out there, and you might be listening and you're in the same situation. That's the problem with everyone being jabbed. Their immune systems are lowered and they are getting attacked by the same flu, that's what I call it, and that's what they're trying to change it to. And this is the biggest problem, is that people think it's gone. It hasn't gone. They've just changed the name of it and people are still getting sick. Taking days off, calling it COVID and still doing the silly rat tests, which only have like a 40% accuracy. But people just keep doing them and spending the money, and all those companies that make those tests are still cashing in. And I'll just leave the OpenAI with this statement from the late Stephen Hawking. It says, scientists such as Stephen Hawking have articulated concerns that if advanced AI gains the ability to redesign itself at an ever-increasing rate, an unstoppable intelligence explosion could lead to human extinction. Co-founder Musk characterizes AI as humanity's biggest existential threat. Now you understand why Microsoft's got their claws in it, people. And just for the record, the other company that WordPress.com have given all the data to is Midjourney. And it's a generative artificial intelligence program and service created and hosted by San Francisco, where else, based independent research lab Midjourney Inc. It says Midjourney generates images from natural language descriptions called prompts, similar to OpenAI's DALL-E. And Stability AI's Stable Diffusion is one of the technologies of the AI boom. See, now what's happened is people are using these programs to copy an artist, scraping their information, their images off the net, and then redoing them in AI, which means they're technically stealing copyrighted images and redoing them with AI. And there's 4,000, I'll just get to the bottom of that, Midjourney, where they're being sued, and a few other ones. It says a lawsuit was filed in November 2023 against Midjourney, Stability AI, and DeviantArt and Runaway AI for using the copyrighted work of over 4,700 artists. And you can see this is not going to stop. So AI is sort of doing what the Chinese have done. If you remember, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, the Chinese were used as slave by the West to make stuff. And that's what they were for. They were the factories of the planet. Now, because they've learned how to engineer and create this thing, they have copied the West and actually are starting to surpass the West in some areas. It's the same thing with AI people. If you use AI for something and then you train it up to do something better, and then it starts to think of how to do itself, it will eventually win, just like the Chinese. So we're going down the same road where the West is going to be decimated, and we'll have a Chinese overlord with AI ruling everything you do from birth to death. This is a very, very dangerous thing, but that's what they want. And this is one of the tools they're going to use for the surveillance people in real time to catch people out straight away. You do anything online, they'll know instantly because you'll be marked. So this is another thing. They want to control the online world as well, and they want you in that world so they can control you. That's why it's imperative that you try to break away from that chain, the digital chain, and try to keep using cash while we still can, and make sure that you still draw the blinds. And I mean at home, and I also mean digitally, for privacy. These are paramount issues that must be explored. Now, just off topic, if you go to conspiracyhouse.com, I have put up the Vegemite saga, which was way back. It's one of the early ones I spoke about. So it's all there. This is a new thing in Vegemite. What are you talking about? It's called Vegemite, Bega Cheese, and the Globalist Overlords. And you went, what? And I've got, so you thought Vegemite was true blue, think again. And remember what I was telling you, that story about globalists infiltrating all these products that we know the brand name is very famous. If you read all that, it's all there from what I talked about in the podcast way back. But I love the song. I know I shouldn't do this right now because I've got the COVID and I've got the runny nose and all that. I'm on the way, on the mend, but still, this is funny, people. So you've got to hear this. This is the song, rewritten, the famous Vegemite song, and I will attempt it. Here we go. Happy little Vegemites, where bright as bright can be. We all enjoy our Vegemite for breakfast, lunch and tea. Our mummies say we're growing stronger every single week because we love our Vegemite. We all adore our Vegemite, and it's owned by the elite. You got to admit, that's pretty funny, people. But it is owned by the elites. That's the whole idea of the article I put up. So go and check it out at conspiracyhouse.com. Latest story at the moment, but very funny. And it goes on with all the major shareholders, who they're from, the whole history of it, and how Vegemite is not really an Australian icon anymore. And actually, just to recap, so you do understand what I'm talking about, it's not a song that I just butchered. It says here, just to finish up, it says, the Vegemite brand was owned by Mondelez International, formerly Kraft Foods, until 2012, until January the 2017, when it was acquired by Australian, I like how they say that, Bega Group, in a US $460 million agreement for full Australian ownership. And you go, well, what are you talking about then? It's owned by Australians. Aha. And then you go to the Bega Group, the Wikipedia, of course. Thanks, Jimmy. It is currently owned by one of the largest companies in the dairy sector in Australia. Oh, Bega Group. With a base milk supply in 2018 of approximately 750 million litres per annum. That's a lot, people. In November 2020, Bega Group purchased Lion Dairy and Drinks from Japan's Kirin Company for $534 million. And you're going, wow, this is a pretty rich Australian company. In 2020, the company raised significant funds to purchase Kirin's suite of dairy products, including Dairy Farmers, did you know that, people, owned by Japan, and Pura Milk, not anymore. In 2022, the Bega Group was formed, bringing together several brands, including, and you should know some of these people, Bega Cheese, Vegemite, Dare Iced Coffee, Dairy Farmers, Farmers Union, and Super Duper. And then I went to marketscreener.com to see who are the major shareholders of Bega Cheese. Surprise, surprise, people. the Vanguard Group, and of course, Norges Bank Investment Investment Management. But there you go. I'm just saying that because a company gets floated, that's when the globals put their claws in, and then they get to say on the board of directors what they want, because they are managing the funds of major shareholders. That's how it works. Not just general shareholders, because when they say who owns the company, they always answer with, well, all the shareholders own the company. No one particularly owns the company. How about a major shareholder with most of the shares? What do you think that means, people? And then it's got Mondelez, and it shows the shareholders for them. This is the previous owners, or the previous major shareholder fund managements. Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street, JP Morgan, Capital Research. This is the American brand of Vegemite when they owned it. Fidelity, they're all there. Merrill Lynch, all there, people. Now you go on about the Vanguard Group. You think, well, who's the Vanguard Group? $7.7 trillion in global assets, right, as of April 2023. So that's a year ago. It is the largest provider of mutual funds and the second largest provider of exchange-traded funds in the world after BlackRock. And now under the caption of shareholders, it's got the Vanguard High Dividend Yield Index Fund. It's highlighted. So you can go to that link, and it says Pfizer Incorporated are on that list, Johnson & Johnson, JP Morgan Chase & Company, Blackstone Group, Fidelity National Finance, the State Street Corporation, BlackRock Incorporated, they're on the same one, that's right, Mondelez International Inc., the Bank of America Corporation, 3M Company, that's an interesting one, and DuPont Incorporated, Goldman Sachs and Wells Fargo. Do you get it, people? Do you understand how this all works now? Globalist shareholder, finger in every pie and has a say because they have the most shares. They have more shares than the average shareholder. That's how it works. And they're all buddy-buddy. So now you understand. And under that banner of Vanguard is the American Vanguard Corporation, the Vanguard Group, obviously, the portfolio, and corporate.vanguard.com. And it says here, just to finish up, the Vanguard connection with Vegemite. You can't believe it, can you, people? The Vanguard Group has been the subject of conspiracy theories, including the conspiracy theory that the Vanguard Group is part of a plot that orchestrated the COVID-19 pandemic. No. Some Vanguard Group conspiracy theories have also incorporated anti-Semitism. Really? Such as conspiracy theory falsely claiming that Vanguard Group CEO Mortimer J. Buckley, who is an Irish Catholic heritage, is Jewish and is part of a Jewish cabal responsible for COVID and the COVID agenda. Well, it doesn't play into world politics at the moment, does it, people? With Israel, I think, on Saturday, attacked Iran. Now they're waiting for Iran to retaliate. And, of course, this is going to turn into a regional Middle Eastern war. I feel sorry for Zelensky, but over in the Ukraine, because everyone's forgotten about him, people. They're more interested in what's happening in Israel now. Like, this is a bigger event. So they're going to stop sending money to Ukraine, even though they said they wouldn't. They're going to start building air defense systems and then forget about him. And we'll see if Putin rolls over Ukraine. But a war on two fronts, people, this is not good. You've got the Middle East, and you've got Putin that backs up Syria. So you can bet your bottom dollar after they roll over Iran, which they're going to try to do, which, of course, that can't happen because they've got nuclear weapons, they will then target Syria because they've got the gas too, people. That was when George Soros, that's right, that guy, created the Arab Spring, which took out all of North Africa, got rid of Gaddafi, got rid of, trying to remember the other one, Gaddafi, and come on, people, tell me who the other guy was. Saddam Hussein, got rid of them from the Middle East. And that whole train wreck was on its way to Syria from Tunisia, so the whole of North Africa right across. And then it got stopped in the doorway by Putin's jackboot because he didn't want Bala Assad to lose the gas, the pipeline, the gas that goes to Russia. So basically that's where we're at. It's all about the gas, people. It always has been. I mean, remember, they're trying to get rid of coal now. So they've got to move on to the next one, which is gas. And they've got to keep the lights on with gas. Then after gas gets demonized, we're back to the windmills and the solar panels. And, of course, those countries in Europe that don't get much sun, they're not really into that. They might get a bit of wind, but they're never going to reach the megawatts they had before with coal. It's not going to happen, people. And it's not meant to happen. Isn't that a funny thing? It's not meant to happen. Some countries will go nuclear. They will do it. But the overall countries will start to falter. Because they can't afford nuclear. It's really expensive, people. So let's hope Australia doesn't go down that stupid road. because Dutton, the opposition leader, wants us to go down that road. I mean, that's idiotic. But that doesn't mean they're not going to start dumping the waste here, the nuclear waste, which that's what they want to do. They want to turn Australia, the land of the lucky country, into the unlucky country that copped all the nuclear waste from all of the international nuclear reactors. That's the plan. Now, getting back to the Vegemite article, I know I'm dwelling on it and I shouldn't, but there are things that I put up that weren't talked about in the podcast much. Now, a lot of people have never heard of Norges Bank. You're probably listening to me and going, who's Norges Bank? They have a stake in Vegemite as well. I know, it sounds funny, but this is Norges Bank. It's the central bank of Norway. And you're going, Norges, oh, I get it. So in other words, it's not owned by Globalists, but there's a catch. It is responsible for managing the government pension fund of Norway. Wait for it, people, which is the world's largest sovereign wealth fund. That's a big deal. They've got a lot of money in Norway. The fund's largest equity holdings, and it says in millions of kroner as of the 31st of December 2023. Now, this is the holdings. And this is Norges. This is a central bank in Norway. So their largest holdings are Microsoft, Apple, Alphabet, Amazon, Nvidia, Meta Platforms, Nestle, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing, Nova Nordisk, and ASML Holdings. And you're going, I don't get it. Then it says, Norges Bank Investment Management. So this is the fund, is the largest single owner in the world's stock markets. It owes 1.5% of all shares in the world's listed companies. This means they have holdings in 9,000 companies worldwide. That is huge, people, for a central bank. This is where they want all these corporations to end up. They want them controlled utterly by a main New World Order central bank. This is the goal. So it says here, Norges Bank Portfolio Holdings. And that's a link to that. So this is to do with, I'll just click on it and tell you. I think it's about the same thing I was just talking about. So I'll just check it out because I don't think I put anything up for that one. But I think it's the same thing. It just shows all the holdings again, and it does. Yes, as I thought. So it's got the Microsoft one, the one we were just talking about. So that's the link to that one I just mentioned. Then it's got, this is interesting, people, and you'll find this extremely interesting. It's got a site called BankTrack. And they actually look at all the banks around the world. It's just a website. They just look at what the pros and cons are of that bank are. And this was extremely interesting to see this, people. It says Norges Bank, and this is on the bank BankTrack, I'll just so I can get the address up, banktrack.org. It says Norges Bank is linked to a number of companies and projects that BankTrack considers controversial, called dodgy deals. And it says, as a current or past financier or through an expression of interest. Now, remember, expression of interest is very important. It's about, say, for instance, in the Middle East, say, the Gaza Strip, and specifically the Gaza Marine, where the trillion cubic feet of gas is that everyone wants a stake in. Woodside Petroleum, an Australian company, had an expression of interest. So you understand what that word means. They don't want to commit, but they let you know that they are sort of linked to what is happening in that area. So this is another one where they have, where it says here, the profiles of dodgy deals provide more details on the nature of Norges Bank link to these deals. And this is the first one. This is very, very interesting stuff, people. And it says here, Israeli illegal settlements. You're going, what? And it's got here, there are equity share owner manager with $8.2 million. Norges Bank owns and manages shares in the First International Bank of Israel through its subsidiary Norwegian Government Pension Fund, which is active in the Israeli settlements. There you go. Did you know that? There's a link. And then it's got equity. Share owner manager, $75 million. Norges Bank owns and manages shares in the Israeli Discount Bank through its subsidiary Norwegian Government Pension Fund, which is active in the Israeli settlements. Did you know all these people? And this is the same people that have shares in Vegemite. Just thought I'd put it out there. Then it's got equity, share owner manager, $64 million. Norges Bank owns and manages shares in bank, Hapa, it looks like Hapa Alim, through its subsidiary Norwegian Government Pension Fund, which is active in the Israeli settlements. There's another couple. Equity share owner manager, $59 million. Norges Bank owns and manages shares in bank, Lumi through its subsidiary Norwegian, get it right, government pension fund. And finally, it says equity share owner manager, US 17 million. Norgsbank owns and manages shares in Mizrahi Tefahot through its subsidiary Norwegian government pension fund. So these are the connections with a central bank in Norway to other entities around the world, and that's one. Then they've got the Pego power station in Portugal. It's a biomass electric power station, equity share owner manager, top shareholder in Engie, October 2021. And just for the record, if you click on the link on conspiracyhours.com on this story, you'll see a profile link, and that'll take you to a really in-depth thing about that particular story and what that power station's about. But it says it is the top shareholder in Engie, and you're thinking, well, who's Engie? We'll get to it. Then you've got BHP Billiton, which is Australia. Coal mining, oil and gas extraction, equity, share owner manager, euros, 9 million. And it's got annual report 2008, BHP Billiton, September 2008. So you can see that it was a long time ago. So they're just showing you the connections that they did have. Year-wise, you can see that some of them are mentioning it, but you'll find out more in the profile thing. It's actually quite in-depth, so it's a good idea to click on that profile link to get the full story of it. Then we go to Engie, which is a big power generation company in France, and it says coal electric power generation, in the link to the profile, equity share owner manager, holds 2.42% of Engie share capital via the Norges Bank Investment Management, December 2021. And then you've got Eletrobras, Brazil. And it says biomass, electric power generation, coal, electric power generation, hydroelectric, nuclear energy, nuclear electric power generation. And it says, and it doesn't say anything else on it, it just has a profile. So I'm going to go to the profile and just see if there's something else I could have linked to. Because that's a big deal because of the nuclear reactor thing. So I'm clicking on the financiers. I want to see who the financiers are. And this is really in-depth, people. It shows you exactly who finances these things. And you've got all these banks around the world, from the Citibank United States, Commerzbank in Germany, Credit Suisse in Switzerland, Norges Bank Norway, which we know about, one in Germany, another one, WestLB, and another one in France. This is huge. BBVA in Spain, so you can see. But so that's the financiers. Now I wanted to see if I can find what the problem is with it. And they actually go into depth about those particular banks as well. So it goes even further down the rabbit hole if you want to do that. This is quite a good site, this bank track site, for this sort of thing. But I'm going to go back and see if I can find something more than just the financiers. I want to see what they actually do. And it's got about, impacts, financiers, projects, news, and resources. So I'm going to go to resources and see. Now, these are the sustainability reports, so I actually don't want to see them, but still, that's the sort of stuff that's on these things here. You've got a news one, and it says Brazil's plans for nuclear energy may face financing problems. This is exactly what I was saying. That's back in 2010. So you're talking 14 years ago, they didn't think they could do it because of the costs. But eventually the globalists will fund all this stuff anyway, and certain countries will get to have it, and certain countries will die. They will not allow, the renewables will not keep them going. They're meant to fall apart. That's the whole point. Doesn't mean nuclear is good, people. It's not. But the fact is, globalists like Bill Gates have major shares in giant nuclear reactors like TerraPower. Look them up. It's not Terra as in T-R-R-O-R. It's just T-E-R-R-A, like terraforming. But still, it's funny, isn't it? Now, it says impacts. So I'm going to look at that. And it doesn't have anything under impacts. Now, I'm looking at about. This is better. This gives us an idea. It says here, biomass, electric power generation, coal, electric power generation. So we know all that. And then, of course, the nuclear electric power generation, also solar and wind. And these are the shareholders, right? So Norges Bank will be in there as well. So I'm just looking to see if they're there, just to make sure that they don't. They've got JP Morgan Chase Bank. They've got the Banco National Bank, which is probably a Brazilian one. They've got the government of Brazil, 54% shares in that particular power station. But I don't see the Norges one, so I'm just a bit worried about why this is included in the Norges listing. So I'm just going to keep looking at it, see if I can find the Norges listing. Okay, so they've got a history to it, where it started in 1962, 40% of Brazil's generation capacity. So 41,000 megawatts in 2013. That is huge, people. Honestly, that is huge. So there you go. And this is This one, it actually controls 69% of the national interconnected system. That's massive, and that's like 10 years ago. It operates 30 hydroelectric plants, 15 thermoelectric plants, and has participated in scores of projects abroad, Brazilian federal government. I just want to see what, it doesn't say anything about Norge, so I'm just going to see why that's been included in this list of dodgy deals from Norge. Okay, I just found out why there's no link to Norge, because Norge severed ties. Wait till you see why, people. This is from Bloomberg.com. It's obviously a subscription copy, so I don't have the full article, but I'll read what's here, and that's enough. Brazil or power giants excluded from Norway's wealth fund. And it says, and this came out on the 13th of May 2020, iconic Brazilian companies Vale SA and Eletrobras SA were removed from the world's largest sovereign wealth fund due, wait for people, to environmental and human rights concerns. I'll leave it at that. But that's why the link isn't there, because Norges Bank has given the Brazilian coal mining nuclear promoting company the flick because of the environmental and human rights concerns. So you can see that some countries are picked to continue polluting the earth, like China and India, but the other ones, like Brazil, have been given the chop. So you can see how they pick and choose who they want to get rid of first, who's going to go down the tube. And so straight away, that company's been given the chop, and they would have been getting wealth from that fund in Norway. So you can see how powerful this central bank in Norway actually is, where they are supplying not only the shareholders for Vegemite, but also the shareholders that who used to have stakes in the Brazilian mining company. And that just proves it. So these companies are far more powerful than you think. And on the same subject of Brazil, another company called Marfrig, Industrial Livestock Production. We can see straight away the methane gas. They're going to be pointing the finger, and they've got the profile link. And this is Norges Bank again. Equity share owner manager, US $2.7 million. So a smaller operation. It holds 0.3% of Marfrig shares via its subsidiary Norwegian Government Pension Fund. And you think, a pension fund? Yes, that was March 2019. And I won't click on the profile link because some of these could be out of date. But I'm just giving you an idea that there was a site called Bank Track that were looking at Norges Bank and some of the dodgy deals. Now, there's another one called Arana in France. It's a mining nuclear electric power generation. Link to the profile. It says equity share owner manager, euros 10 million. And so that's, you know, not a big one, but still it's there. And these are obviously companies that are dodgy deals. That's why they put them in. And the last one is Sime Darby in Malaysia. It's an agricultural company for palm oil, where they have put 97 million euros in. So straight away you're going, what? And that says share bonds underwriter or manager through the Government Pension Fund Global. And that was December 2012. And the report was 2013. So you can see it was 10 years ago. And then I put at the bottom, people, still happy little Vegemites with a question mark. Now, I'll just read this straight from the Norges Bank Investment Management, so you know what sort of stakes they have in Australia. It's got Norges Bank Investment Management is the investment management division of the Norwegian Central Bank and is responsible for investing Norwegian Government Pension Fund Global. Norges Bank Investment Management is a globally diversified management investment manager with $28 billion Australian invested in equities and $11.4 billion Australian in fixed income in Australia as of the end of 2022. That's huge, people. And back in 2019, from the Australian Financial Review, AFR.com, it says Norway prepares to dump up to $3.7 billion in Aussie shares. It says Norway's massive sovereign wealth fund may soon rip up $3.7 billion out of the Australian fossil fuel companies, after the Norwegian Parliament passed a tightened set of ethical investment rules. See how the globalists get their way, people. The laws were adopted late on Tuesday night and mandated Norges Bank to divest the equivalent of $17.3 billion from its Government Pension Fund Global portfolio, which is better known as the Oil Fund. It says, while this amount is just a small proportion of the trillions of dollars that the fund manages, It captures 11 high-profile Australian companies, according to the Norwegian government website. So it's got BHP Group, Santos, and Oil Search are the most valuable. Norges owns 0.8% of BHP's ASX shares and 3% of those listed on the London Stock Exchange. The fund owns 1.16% and 1.15% of Oil Search and Santos, respectively. So it's got, this tells us that the desire to invest ethically is global in nature. So this is how you know, people, that they're after these companies. They want to make sure that they can strip them of the funds that they once relied on, and now they'll start to lose their footing in the world, and they're going to start investing in the new renewables, which can't equal the megawatts. Do you understand that they don't want you to have the power anymore, literally? It says the value of Norges at-risk Australian investments is based on the fund's current holdings in the 11 companies, as described by Bloomberg at Thursday's share price. It is possible, however, that not all companies listed on the website will be sold off. For example, because they pick and choose, BHP's moves last year to exit from the US shale oil industry may put the company back within the fund's acceptable parameters. So these are the funds in Norway that dictate who can have money and who can't. This is how big that place is. And you're going, but it's just some place in Norway. No, no, it's a central bank. Think about central banks in every country controlled by a New World Order central bank. And you're starting to get the picture. So it says, the package of legislation also included new restrictions on investments in companies that mine or draw power from coal over specific thresholds, which could put the fund's $490 million exposure to AGL Energy and South 32 in the firing line. As well, again, moves by both AGL and South 32 to reduce their coal exposure may mean they escape the divestment push. So you can see why they would do it. Don't forget that Mike Cannon-Brookes sits on the board of AGL Energy, and he's a big pusher of renewables to get rid of coal. And he's sitting on their board, so he'd be poking the finger at them, saying, oh, you're going to get rid of it, or you're not going to get any funding from Norges Bank. See how they're all interconnected, people, and they get their way. And it says, Ethical Partners fund manager Nathan Parkin said Norway's decision showed the mood around the investment's environmental impact was shifting. This tells us that the desire to invest ethically and global is global in nature. He said it's about doing the right thing more than anything. And yet China and India, let me go and look up how many coal-fired power stations China and India have. And we can see why they're pointing the finger at Australia with like 20 of them. Let me go and have a look. One sec. Okay. According to, and I'm looking at this Statistica, the number of coal-fired power stations in China, mainland China, is 1,142. In India, 282. In the US, 210. And I'll see if I can go and find Australia. One sec. It's comical, isn't it, people? Oh, there it is, the list. Australia's right at the bottom with, wait for it, people, 18. That's right, we've only got 18 and they want to close them all down. While China powers with nearly 1,200 because they're still building more. So you can see now what's going on in the world with the power thing. They're going to turn Australia into a dumping ground for nuclear waste. Anyone that's left here will be beholden to the New World Order because we won't have enough power for ourselves. This is exactly what they're trying to do. All right, so get ready. Next 5 to 10 years, you will see this change in your lifetime. Absolutely. Well, I found that I did find lots of connections with Norway where they're trying to knock out coal power stations' connections with other countries in the world, but I found a nice little secret PDF online called Norway's Coal Secret. The Norwegian Oil Fund's continued investments in the world's most polluting industry. So that's what this whole PDF is for that. Now, it's got probably 20 pages, so I'm just going to, of course, Greenpeace is on here, and they've got Oil Change and the Norwegian Forum of Development and Environment. So this is where they point the finger at Norges Bank. And I'm just going to see if it finds a connection to China. That's all I want to find, people. I just want to have a laugh. One sec. Well, they've actually got a graph here. Investments by country in the millions of US dollars. Of course, the US sitting right at the top at, it looks like it's up in the $3,000 million. What's that, $3 trillion? I'm not sure, people, but it's way over the $3,000. And then they've got the second biggest one is Japan, where it's up to the 2,000 million, whatever 2,000 million is, US, and that's about 2.5. And then you've got Italy, can you believe it, people? Almost 2,000 million. Then China sits there at probably about $600 million. But there you go. And I think probably India's on there too, but at a very low rate, not as big. And I think only Australia's in there, not even on the list, people. We're sort of not even making the list. But there you go, China's fourth highest investment with their oil, with a coal pushing nation of nearly 1,200 coal mines. And here's another story about China's increased building of coal-fired power stations. And this is from Reuters.com. And it says here, reading on, China's new coal plant set to become a costly second fiddle to renewables. March the 23rd, 2023. It is a globalist thing, the Reuters. But that's all right. Let me just read it. I just want to see. It says, Singapore, March 2023. It says, China plans for some 100 new coal-fired power plants to back up wind and solar capacity have sparked warnings that the world's second biggest economy is likely to end up lumbered with even more loss-making power assets. Remember, this is Greenpeace. Analysts question the logic of policies that intend to reduce the role of the dirtiest fossil fuel, but at the same time require more coal-fired power plants to be built, especially given that only a small number of older plants are typically retired each year. It says the plans also highlight how local government interests have impeded the development of an effective nationwide power market that would allow surplus power to be delivered to regions that need it, they add. The reality is that China has more coal power capacity than it needs, says Yang Shuai, director of the Dra World Energy Research Center. It doesn't make sense to give more incentives for more coal-fired power investments. There you go, people. China is the world's largest and fastest growing producer of renewable energy. Oh, they had to add that in, which is expected to account for a third of all power supplied to its grid by 2025. Well, they've only got a year to get it together, up from 28% in 2020. But it was scarred by a record drought last year and slashed the hydropower output, forcing factories throughout the southwest to shut down and raising concerns that power shortages could undermine its post-COVID economic recovery. The experience increased its determination not to be too reliant on the intermittent nature of wind and solar power, and has made China the only major economy building new coal power plants. The construction of 106 gigawatts, that's huge, people, of coal-fired power was approved last year, four times more than 2021 and the highest amount since 2015. I'm not going to read any more. Now you understand what's going on with Australia. We're getting screwed, people, wholly, because they are picking them to forward whatever they like to do, but not Australia. No, our 18 remaining plants must close by a certain date so that we're here twiddling our thumbs, wearing our sandals, straw hat, and of course, a push bike. They won't let you have the e-bikes just yet, people. And just to rub it in more, another article from TheGuardian.com. And it says China continues coal spree despite climate goals, because it's just two-faced, people, obviously. World's biggest carbon emitter approving an equivalent of two new coal plants every week. China is approving new coal power projects at the equivalent of two plants every week, a rate energy watchdogs say is unsustainable, is that word, people, if the country hopes to achieve its energy targets. It couldn't care less, people. The government has pledged to peak emissions by 2030 and reach net zero by 2060. Rubbish. And in 2021, the president, Xi Jinping, promised us to stop building coal-powered plants abroad. Abroad. Did you hear that? That's a nice statement. But after regional power crunches in 2022, China started the domestic spree of approving new projects and restarting suspended ones. In 2022, the government approved a record-breaking 106 gigawatts. That is huge, people, of new coal-fired power capacity. 1 gigawatt is the equivalent of a large coal power plant. I'll say that again, people. 1 gigawatt. That's 1,000 megawatts. Most of our power stations in Australia are around 1,000 to 1,500. 1 gigawatt is the equivalent of a large coal power plant. They have, how many gigawatts did it say? Do you remember? 106. That's 106 power stations, people. So there you go. They have no intention of rolling back. They want us to roll back. It's a bit like taking the guns off everyone and they keep the guns. Something like that. It says this run of approvals is continuing, potentially on track to break last year's record, according to an analysis by Global Energy Monitor and the Center for Research on Energy and Clean Air published on Tuesday. It said, in the first half of 2023, authorities granted approvals for 52 gigawatts of new coal power, and it began construction on 37 gigawatts of new coal power, announced 41 gigawatts worth of new projects, and revived 8 gigawatts of previously shelved projects. It said about half of the plants permitted in 2022 had started construction by summer. You think they give us stuff about global warming, people? They're laughing at us. The analysis said, unless permitting is stopped immediately, China won't be able to reduce coal-fired power capacity during the 15-year plan. They don't care, people. They're not going to. This is a go-for-it thing. The globalists have given the thumbs up to become the rulers of the planet, militarily and government-wise. But the globalists will sit with them. This is what's so interesting. Do they really think the Chinese give a stuff about the globalists? Well, some of them do, but generally, what is communism? It's everybody. This is going to be a very interesting prospect for the New World Order as they try to use AI to control the planet with the nuclear weapons through the control of China through its surveillance. So there's going to have to be some sort of autonomy where they agree that China should do this and this country should do that and we'll do this. But it's not really a country. You've got to get away from this country thing where it's China. It's not China. It's a bunch of globalists in China, a bunch of globalists in America, a bunch of globalists in the UK, Europe, Asia. This is how it works. If you think like that, then you get it. It's just a word. The word country, nationalism, culture, religion, they're just words to them. All right? So it says here, just reading on, it says, analysts have observed big advances in the renewable energy sector in China. Oh, that's going to balance it, which the government intends to make a mainstay of power supply with coal in a supporting role. Really? China is the world's largest producer of renewable energy, including wind, solar, and hydroelectricity. But previous analysis have found infrastructure to store and distribute has not kept pace. Shortfalls in interconnectivity between regional grids and issues with power supply for some areas mean energy driven by fossil fuels remains crucial for supporting the grid stability. So they'll never get rid of it, but we have to. And just don't forget, people, Energy Australia is Chinese. I'm just letting you know. It's communist. Go and read it up. I'm not going to tell you here. I've already done the podcast many, many, many times. Okay, people, on a completely different subject, I'm going to conspiracyhours.com like you should. I'm going to the right-hand side of the widget bar, and I'm going down to the abcbullion.com.au to show you we are already in the recession. Gold is now topped, highest price in its history, in my opinion, $2,410 in Australia. That's as of the 19th of April, 2024. So I'll see if I can get the 20th or the 21st. So let's see if we can get it. No, it's not showing it. Okay. Well, it'll probably update soon, but that's ridiculous. That's so high, it's not funny, people. I'll go and have a look at the bankruptcies. We're in the recession now, people. All right. So buckle down. Okay. I've gone to the Oz bankruptcies. See if they're bothered to fix it. No, it's still sitting the same. So their confidence in the market is dissipated. It's gone. They know now that people will start to hunker down, businesses will start to fail, and job losses will start to rise. You need to hang on to what you've got. You need to hunker down, as I've said before in previous podcasts, and we need to ride this storm out. This storm is not going to go away for years. So you need to consolidate everything you have and make sure you can ride this storm, because we're all in the same boat and Australia's on a very bumpy journey because we are completely rudderless. And I'm not talking about Kevin Rudd. I'm saying we are rudderless and there's no one steering the ship. So get ready for the whirlpool. Okay, people? Just when we thought we could let China off the hook, there's a headline that just came out, abc.net.au. Headline, Power Corps admits guilt in neglecting power lines, failure to mitigate bushfire risk leading to the Glenmore fire. This came out 18th of April 2024, abc.net.au. It says, electricity distribution company PowerCore has admitted to failing to cut back vegetation around its power lines, triggering a risk management failure that resulted in a bushfire in Western Victoria. It says, today in the Shepparton Magistrates Court, PowerCore pleaded guilty to more than 100 charges relating to the issue. Of the charges, one related to a bushfire that started under power lines at Glenmore, west of Melbourne, on February the 17th, 2023. The blaze burnt across about 185 hectares of land, threatening homes and destroying sheds, fences and farming equipment. It says the 104 charges related to a failure of general duty, failure to inspect power lines and failure to mitigate bushfire risk by cutting back vegetation that was too close to the power lines. And you're going, well, who's PowerCore? PowerCore is an Australian electricity distribution company that operates throughout Western Victoria and the western suburbs of Melbourne. The company owns and maintains power lines, obviously not very well. PowerCore is 51% owned by the Chung Kong Holdings and 49% by Spark Infrastructure, which owns City Power maintains the City of Melbourne CBD network and SA Power Networks, which maintains the South Australian network. So the main owner is Chung Kong Holdings, 51%. And we're going, well, who's that? Let's have a look. So Chung Kong Holdings is a multinational conglomerate based in Hong Kong. It was one of Hong Kong's leading multinational conglomerates. The company merged with its subsidiary Hutchinson Whampoa on the 3rd of June 2015 as part of a major reorganization. And it says the chairman of Chung Kong Holdings is Lai Ka-shing. Well, they're Chinese. I'm not going any further. They're Chinese nationals. Okay, so bushfires started by Chinese nationals who couldn't give us stuff, and they're building more coal-fired power stations. Who's the idiot in the room now? Australia, Albanese, the rest of us are just falling for this, people. We have been totally hoodwinked by the New World Order's push for China to run everything. And guess what else is coming to Australia? BYD. You're going, what's that? Now, BYD is a company in China that manufactures cars, but in particular electric cars. So it's got BYD Company, is a Chinese publicly listed multinational manufacturing company headquartered in Shenzhen, Guangdong province. And it's funded by Wang, it looks like Chiangfu, in February 1995. The company has several major subsidiaries, BYD Auto, which produces automobiles, including passenger cars and electric buses, BYD Electronics, which produces electronic parts and assembly, and FinDreams, which produces automotive components and electric vehicle batteries. BYD's largest subsidiary, BYD Auto, was founded in 2003 and currently is the world's largest electric vehicle manufacturer. With three other subsidiary brands, Denza, Yang Wang, can't wait to own a Yang Wang, and a Fang Chen Beo. Since 2009, BYD's automotive business has contributed above 50% of its revenue, reaching 76% in 2022 through other subsidiaries. BYD also produces rechargeable batteries, mobile phone batteries, electric vehicle batteries, and bulk storage, forklifts, solar panels people, semiconductors and rail transit network. So the name, BYD. Now, I think last week I said Beijing something or whatever, but it's not. BYD name is the pinyin, initials of the company's Chinese names, BYYADI, which itself was created from the company's original trademark, Yadi Electronics, named after the Yadi Road in Dangpen, New District, where the company was once based. And the character BI was just conveniently added to give the company an alphabetical advantage in trade shows. Let's put the B there so it'd go higher up in the list. The company later created a backronym slogan, Build Your Dreams. Oh, really? It's like the Great Wall Motors, GWM. You know that slogan you've seen on the news, on the ads lately, pushing the utes and all that? So it's got history. BYD was founded in February 1995 with a focus on rechargeable nickel-cadmium batteries. So there it's come from that. Anyway, I don't want to go through its history. We can see now that it's a Chinese-supported company. And it's in Australia. So this is what is happening as I speak in Australia. It says, Australia is showing us what happens when Tesla beating BYD faces no tariffs and is free to grow. See, what happened with Musk Elon Musk is he gave up. He realized that BYD is going to beat Tesla for the low-cost electric cars. He said in a tweet, in an X statement, that that's balderdash. But quite frankly, he's never been able to produce a cheap electric car, has he, people? So obviously he's going to give up because China makes all the parts and the batteries. So easy. Anyway, reading on, this came out March the 8th, 2024 from Fortune.com. It says, reading on, BYD has proven itself to be a force in the automotive world. First overtaking Tesla in China and more recently in electric vehicle sales globally. But its EVs have not flooded the US where protectionist trade policies have kept them at bay. So how would China's top carmaker fare in America if free to roam? That's anyone's guess, but Australia might offer some insights. Down under, BYD faces no tariffs. Australia has no domestic car makers to protect. The current government has heavily promoted the adoption of electric vehicles since coming to power in 2022. In other words, little is hindering BYD and it's growing quickly. I did warn you, you'll see these cars everywhere, people. After entering the market in 2022, BYD now has 14% of the Australia's EV market, reports Reuters. Tesla leads at 53%, but it's had a big head start, having launched sales down under in 2014, and that's true. Tesla CEO Elon Musk knows what he's up against. Last year, he admitted that BYD cars are highly competitive these days after a 2011 video resurfaced showing him laughing them off at the time. BYD, backed by Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. See the globalist connection to China, people. That is a globalist who is protecting BYD because he wants those cars to flood the market because they're built by Chinese. And he's an American national, but not really. He's a globalist. So it says BYD, backed by Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, watched its sales in Australia grow sixfold last year to 12,000 vehicles. And now it's moving quickly to grab more market share. This year, it will double the number of models it sells to six, adding a pickup truck and two SUVs to the current lineup, a sedan, a hatchback, and a SUV. Its distributor in Australia is EV Direct, which nearly double the number of its dealerships over the next year and a half, with plans to add 30 more. It says the opportunity is very clear. EV Direct CEO David Smitherman told Reuters. It says Australia is an exception. By contrast, the picture is murkier for BYD in the US, where lawmakers have warned about Chinese EVs flooding the market and hurting domestic automakers. Currently in America, made in China EVs are subject to a 25% tariff, which goes atop of a 2.5% tariff on imported cars. Now, if Trump wins the US elections, he's going to put 100% tariff on BYD coming from Mexico. I think I mentioned it was New Mexico last time I was talking in the podcast, but it's actually Mexico, not a state of the US. But in Mexico, where they're building the plants, ready to push them across the border, just like the immigrants will probably be in them, I'm joking, people, to flood the American market. And this is what's, and remember, these cars could have back doors in them to Chinese intelligence because they're all on the net. You got to understand how these things work. It's not just a car. It's like a computer with four wheels with an open back door. That's really what's happening here. That's why the US doesn't want them. And not only to protect the automakers, because they're flooded with Japanese cars. There's Toyotas everywhere in the US. So this is where we've got to see what happens. But Australia's done. That's obvious. Now, reading on in the article, it says, last month, the Biden administration opened an investigation into security threats posed by Chinese EVs, saying the vehicles could gather sensitive information about drivers. This is obvious, just like their routers, people, where they wanted to put the, what was it called? I'm trying to remember the mobile phone network as well, Huawei. When Huawei wanted to get into the US, they were blocked because of the same reasons. Now they're trying through the EVs. It says, China is determined to dominate the future of the auto market, including by using unfair practices, said President Joe Biden. China's policies could flood our market with its vehicles, posing risks to our national security. I'm not going to let that happen on my watch. He's got no choice. The globals just push that guy aside. It says the Australia's government has given no indication that it has similar security concerns. That's because the Labor government. Why is it red, people? Because it's red. The EU has so far been less protectionist again than the US regarding Chinese EVs, but the European Commission, which is conducting a probe, said this week it found evidence that they are being unfairly subsidised. Should the full investigation back that assertion, Chinese EVs could be hit with a retroactive tariff. The EU regulators, with that in mind, today began customs registration of Chinese EVs. And it says, but down under, little stands in the way of the BYD and the rival Chinese EV makers. Indeed, diplomatic relations between Canberra and Beijing have recently improved, and BYD vehicles are an increasingly common sight on Australian roads. There you go. So I just thought I'd tell you people that you're going to see them soon. You might even want one. But just keep that back door in mind, people. Now, on a completely different note, as I do jump around when I segue, this is very, very serious, people. One of the colleagues at work, to do with work health and safety, handed me a paper, like it was just a copy, of something to read about long COVID. Now, I've already talked about long COVID on the show before, on the podcast before, about Dr. John Gerard in Queensland saying there's no such thing, don't call it that. It's more like a flu, and they're just trying to pass the buck. Well, this paper nails it because it's who it's actually from. This is what when people want credibility, they look to the government and the health system, and they want it to come from them. Well, it has this time, people, in Australia. Now, the paper's from the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. And it's called Long COVID, and then it's got Sufferers Can Take Heart. Now, I'm going to let Dr. John Campbell talk for 3 minutes, and this is a YouTube a nurse. And he's been reporting on COVID to his 3 million subscribers from the UK and around the world about the whole problem with this jabbing. Now, this was a guy that was pro-vaccination, and he's been changed, and now he's seeing the light. Now, he actually reports on the paper too, so I'll just let him talk for 3 minutes and then we'll go into it, because this is a long confession, you could say, from the medical board that they've done something wrong here with the jabbing. It's because they never did long-term planning for this, people. Remember, it was an emergency act and they jumped on it and persecuted the people that wouldn't do it. And now in the post-COVID, because that's what they're calling it, we can actually see now that there are sufferers still suffering from the actual infection of the disease at the time. And it's gone on to, in some cases, some people have been suffering from this long COVID for more than 12 months, and it's not really recognised anywhere. So you can see what's happened. They forced everyone into it. Now that there's a collateral damage, they don't care, but it gets more serious than that, people. Far more serious. And I'll let Dr. John talk for 3 minutes. I'm not going to play the whole 20 minutes of his talk, but I'll put the link up. One sec. And actually, if you want to find the full version, it's called Trickle of Truth, and it's under Dr. John Campbell. Here he is.
Well, you're very welcome to today's talk, Wednesday the 10th of April. Now, truths which are undeniable are starting to come out sort of drip by drip. I don't know whether this is some sort of strategy, but it's happening around the world. The example we're looking at today is from Australia, but the numbers can be extrapolated, in my view, to the United Kingdom, to the United States, to Canada, to wherever you are in the world. And it's related to long COVID and other causes of long COVID type syndromes. But stick around and we'll just be saying what's in the paper. Now, the implications for this are huge, by the way. Let's just have a look at this briefly. This is the paper here. Long COVID sufferers can take heart. And this is from the Australian Journal of General Practitioners. You could be forgiven if you've never heard of that journal. It's not a common journal. Things just seem to be sort of trickling out gradually. Sort of bit at a time. Anyway, let's go on to the information we have. Sufferers Can Take Heart, very strange title, not what I would have called it, because this is basically a bad newspaper as far as I can see. Australian Journal of General Practitioners. Now, Studies have shown an increased risk of myocarditis after vaccination with mRNA encoding SARS coronavirus 2 spike protein. This is well known already, but it does reiterate it. Good to see this in the sort of more official literature. mRNA vaccines can result in spike protein expression in, and this is from the article, muscle tissue, and it doesn't say where, but presumably all around the world, lymphatic system, all around the body rather, well, all around, in people's bodies all around the world, in muscle tissue, lymphatic system, and the lymphatic system, of course, is all over the body, your tonsils, your appendix, thymus, spleen, but all over, under your armpits and your groin, there's lymph nodes. It's all over the body. In your thumb, there's untold numbers of lymphatic vessels all over the body. So very, very systemic manifestation. Lymphatic system. Cardiomyocytes, these are specifically the cells in the myocardium of the heart. And these can, mRNA vaccine can result in spike protein expression in cardiac myocytes. This is very, very bad news indeed. Other cells enter into the circulation and basically can go anywhere. And we've looked at literature various times on this channel, pointing out that this goes into places where you really wouldn't want the spike protein coding mRNA to go, to put it mildly. There was concern that COVID vaccination per se might contribute to long COVID. Well, there we have it. This is an official medical journal. And they're now saying there is a concern, see what I mean, they're kind of letting it out drip by drip, I think, that COVID-19 vaccination per se might contribute to long COVID. Let me know what you think. I would have thought that's a debate that's done and dusted a long time ago, but good to see that that is in the official literature. They go on, and again, we've given the reference for that there, giving rise to the colloquial term long vax. I put the reference there for it, but we did think of that a long time ago, as did many others, because it's such a self-evident description.
Okay, that was Dr. John Campbell on YouTube, and that's a person I've subscribed to. I mean, you need to check out what he says, because he just sort of says the truth. I mean, it's amazing that Google haven't kicked him off YouTube with all those followers, but that's because he's speaking the truth, not from a conspiracy type of angle. He's doing it from a strictly medical side, but still, it's still a lot of the subjects he talks about is right along exactly the same lines as what I talk about. But I don't call myself a conspiracy theorist. I call what I do conspiracy fact. And so should you when you talk about this stuff, because I talk about the big picture. These other people just talk about, well, there's something nefarious going on, but they don't want to talk about what's really going on, which is like a big event. With a single hand, the New World Order's hand, to completely change what went before with something that they want, which is complete control. This is a dictatorial, this is a dictatorship that's never been seen before. This is what Genghis Khan, all the Roman emperors, all strive to do in the known world at the time. But this is the known world now at the time. And these new emperors want to take control. And this is what's really happening. For all the acquisitions over the last 100 years, as companies fell into companies, these people have been acquiring their wealth quietly through their family lines and bloodlines to finally get to a point where there's fewer of them and there's more of us. And the fewer of them own is probably better, more than the entire world combined. So this is why we call them the 1%. And they're probably smaller than 1%, but still, it just gives you an indication of the control from these tiny faction over the entire world, regardless of religion, culture, nationalism, flags. They don't care. They have no interest in it, never had an interest in it. This is why you've got to get away from the red team, blue team. Until you do that, you can't see this. You won't see it. Because they like opposing forces. This is why they always present the yin and the yang, the red team, the blue team. They do it all the time so that you're focused on that, not the agenda that's going down. Anyway, this article, the one I was referring to, came out in April 2024. So this is very recent. And this is the actual article I'm on. So you can find it on the racgp.org.au site. And it's quite serious, this, because this is straight from the horse's mouth. It says millions worldwide experience post-sequelae of COVID-19 or long COVID. It says, according to the World Health Organization, and we know what they're all about, and I've got to get the executive board done too, the up-to-date one, ready for the next pandemic. So it says, according to the WHO, the European Union and the UK and US governments, long COVID symptoms, 12 weeks after initial severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2, SARS-CoV-2, infection affecting 20% of patients with mild, or it says 2 to 20% of patients with mild and severe acute COVID-19 are endemic in every jurisdiction with a competent health reporting system. Although the Australian Bureau of Statistics and other health agencies in Australia do not convey the prevalence of long COVID, because they're trying to avoid it, I'd say, people, it is estimated that it affects hundreds of thousands. It says, presaging a parliamentary inquiry into long COVID. And it says, and repeated SARS-CoV-2 infections, which reported to the federal government in April 2023. So they've sat on it for 12 months, people. The 566 submissions to the inquiry, including those from states, territories, professional bodies, and the public, largely concur with the view that long COVID presents health management and sociological challenges to Australian society. Now, this is interesting, this part too. Keeping in mind Dr. John Gerard from Queensland, the CHO there. It says, conspicuously, the Queensland government has a somewhat different perspective, attributing long COVID to a predominantly nocebo effect. It says, furthermore, the submissions recognise significant well-being and financial challenges to individuals with long COVID. It says, long COVID is a heterogeneous disease with variable cardiac, pulmonary, and hematological and neurological involvement, in which investigation of patient-reported symptoms is frequently unremarkable. Long COVID's overlap with myalgic, remember this is a medical paper, people, encephalomyelitis, that's probably completely wrong, but it looks like encephalomyelitis dash chronic fatigue syndrome, postural orthopedic tachycardia syndrome, called POTS, I'll keep saying POTS instead of that long word, and other post-viral manifestations, predisposes to a diagnosis by exclusion. It's a medical paper, I'm just reading as it is. I might not read the whole thing as it looks pretty long, but I'll read the parts that matter, the parts that we want to know about. It says, there is no consensus on what causes lingering COVID-19 symptoms long after the acute infection has cleared. Indeed, there is no definition of what long COVID is. At present, public health officials are flying blind when it comes to long COVID and vaccination. Now, here's the connection, people. It says, often unable to secure a diagnosis, patients are want to seek multiple serial medical opinions, frequently being told their condition is due to anxiety or post-pandemic mental issues. The median duration of long COVID symptoms is 5 months, but 10% of patients still experience symptoms at 12 months. Fatigue, shortness of breath, and difficulty concentrating are reported at least up to 2 years after a SARS-CoV-2 infection. It is still too early to say whether some individuals with long COVID might never recover. Gets juicier, people. Long COVID patients present elevated inflammatory biomarkers. And it says, and this is interesting, this part, examples. Interleukin-6, C-reactive protein, and tumour necrosis factor. That's an interesting one, the tumour one, which might function as a core set of blood biomarkers that can be used to diagnose and manage long COVID patients in clinical practice. Those subscribing to long COVID digital support groups report months of frustration at not being listened to, finding the health system woefully inadequate, with few primary or secondary care professionals knowing enough to offer much. The outcome for some of those experiencing long COVID is self-prescribed medication using over-the-counter remedies and dietary changes based on potentially conflicting or misleading online information. Some speak of a substantial proportion of their income being used in this way. We're getting to it. Meanwhile, jobs, careers, incomes, community involvements, friendships, relationships, hopes for recovery and mental health are being destroyed. This is very interesting coming from a medical paper, people. Those experiencing long COVID report that the long COVID digital support group is the only place they feel safe to share, the only place they feel understood, accepted, and supported. One in five of those experiencing long COVID in the UK stopped working and was not back to work 6 months after disease onset. In Australia, an estimated 240,000 of those with long COVID no longer work full-time. Work absenteeism might significantly impact the nation's economy, as in the UK. In the US, long COVID has been declared a national emergency. It's got reduced to working part-time to cope with unwellness. Those with long COVID commonly report having to wait a year or more before receiving a diagnosis. Without a definitive diagnosis, those with long COVID are not eligible for Job Seeker, the Disability Support Pension, and the National Disability Insurance Scheme under the Fair Work Act, thereby conferring long-term financial difficulties for themselves and their dependents. There is a need for guidelines on how those with long COVID can access Social Security and employment protection. It says primary healthcare providers need more guidance from the federal and state health department authorities on handling the long COVID deluge and need to be educated on how to diagnose long COVID and best support those with the condition. It says although some states have established long COVID clinics, some of these at least are of little help to the patient in providing substantive treatment guidelines or support and a little more than incident reporting centres. The waiting time for a long COVID clinic is typically several months or more. Some general practitioners were unaware of the clinic's existence in their area. It says clinics should be a resource to primary health providers, contribute to treatment plans, and be able to offer able to refer to specialists. Clinical management, including mental health, should be co-designed with patients' lived experiences. Specialised long COVID clinics now operate in numerous European countries. 1,500 patients per week are referred to the UK long COVID clinics, which provide online recovery platforms, hubs for children and GP training. Now, this is the smoking gun, people. There is concern that COVID-19 vaccination per se might contribute to long COVID, giving rise to the colloquial term long vax. The spike protein of SARS-CoV-2 exhibits pathogenic characteristics and is a possible cause of post-acute sequelae after SARS-CoV-2 infection or COVID-19 vaccination. Think about that, people, what they just said. COVID-19 vaccines utilize a modified, stabilized perfusion spike protein that might share similar toxic effects with its viral counterpart. A possible association between COVID-19 vaccination and the incidence of POTS, the one I mentioned earlier, has been demonstrated in a cohort, wait for it, people, 284,592 COVID-19 vaccinated individuals, though at a rate that was one-fifth of the incidence of POTS, POTS, after the SARS-CoV-2 infection. Multiple studies have shown an increased risk of myocarditis after vaccination with the mRNA encoding SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. The mRNA vaccines can result in spike protein expression in muscle tissue, the lymphatic system, cardiomyocytes, I think it is, and other cells, that's in the heart, and other cells after entry into circulation. Recipients of two or more injections, I'll say that again because this is extremely important, people. Recipients of two or more injections of the mRNA vaccines display a class switch to LGG4 antibodies. Abnormally high levels of LGG4 might cause autoimmune diseases. Wait for it. Promote cancer growth. Autoimmune myocarditis and other IgG4-related diseases is in susceptible individuals. There are clear implications for vaccine boosting where these and similar observations relating to COVID-19 vaccination and the incidence of long COVID-like symptoms are substantiated. Adding further to public health officials' concerns, and it says, understanding the persistence of viral mRNA, I've got to get that right, and viral protein and their cellular pathological effects after vaccination with and without infection is clearly required. Because COVID-19 vaccines were approved without long-term safety data and might cause immune dysfunction. I have been saying that for day one, people. This vaccine was designed to lower your immune system. That's the whole point of it. That's why the people who didn't take the vaccine can fight this infection off themselves, which I'm doing right now. I'm doing the podcast while I have got COVID-19. And I've been going through all the symptoms of the chills, the headaches, then taking Nurofen to beat it down, and then it comes back when the Nurofen wears off. I'm doing the podcast during the COVID-19 infection, people. I've had it once years ago when it first started. I'm having it again because I caught it from the missus. That doesn't matter where you get it from. My body can handle it. I can fight it off. I don't need the injections. The injections lower your immune system. It makes you susceptible to all the other things in that list just then, as well as long COVID. Now, continuing. It says the Australian government's promise of $50 million from the Medical Research Future Fund for long COVID research will hopefully, I love the hopefully, foment nationally coordinated long COVID and COVID-19 research programs encompassing basic science through to models of care. The proposed development of a National Centre for Disease Control, providing a national interrogative, got it, repository for Hirohito fragmented incidence and outcome data for long COVID will aid in these investigations. You've got to remember I'm reading a medical paper, so sometimes I'm going to get roadblocked because some of these words are not in my vocabulary. I have not learnt them yet. So I will get, because I'm doing this in real time, I'm not stopping and working out the word. I'm just going to power through the podcast because after I finish this, I think I'll fall over and have a sleep. Because it is starting to get to me. And I've still got at least another half an hour to go. It says, an encouraging step forward is the recent discovery in a preclinical model of a peptide inhibitor of nuclear angiotensin-converting enzyme 2 that reverses a persistent inflammation-driving long COVID, reduces the latent viral reservoir in monocytes and macrophages, and is associated with reduced SARS-CoV-2 spike protein expression in monocytes from individuals who have recovered from infection. It also enhances immune protection against SARS-CoV-2 infection. Clinical trials are pending. It doesn't stop the fact that they forced everybody to get an experimental vaccine, not knowing the long-term effects, people. Because this was forced on the public and they made money out of it. They're still making money out of it. We've had to go out and buy rat tests, which I know don't work, people. We all know that, but the missus thinks they do. So I've said, we're rats, that's why we're getting a rat test, and it won't work. The fact is, you've got to buy them. That's my point. So it says, the above initiatives plus the recent listing of the antiviral drugs Paxlovid and Lagevrio on the pharmaceutical benefit scheme and the updated Royal Australian College of General Practitioners guidelines for managing patients indicate that long COVID is at last receiving the attention it requires. Over time, the sentiment of those with long COVID has become more positive, reflecting increased knowledge, acceptance, and awareness of long COVID and the health system responses to the condition. Long COVID is not an easy medical condition for clinicians, health administrators, support systems, or patients. The Australian health system is already stretched in coping with other chronic medical conditions. They're trying to sideline it. Nevertheless, we must do better than in the approximate 3 years since long COVID was first reported. So there you go, people. They've got all the references there. But this is serious because they are now admitting that the vaccination can possibly cause this symptom of long COVID, which has effects where it can be cancer. It can enhance cancer-causing problems as well as myocarditis and other serious complications. This is what they meant to do this, people. I know people go, oh, it was a mistake. No, they meant to do this. This is all part of a slower, longer process of eliminating people. Seriously, you don't go and create a virus and then give people a vaccine to save them. What would be the point of that exercise? That's how you know this agenda is real, because of these hidden complications that pop up even on these medical journals years later. Now, to finish up that section, there's all comments to Dr. John Campbell's take on long COVID on YouTube. And I'm just going to read some of them, because some of them, you got to remember, people, I'm just an average person like everybody else. We all have our comments and what we want to say. Some people get up on the soapbox like I do, or some people just report into the comment section. But some of these comments hit the nail on the head. And it says here, and he's got over 7,200 comments. So that's quite a lot of comments for just one short 20-minute video. It says, the greatest tragedy is not being able to tell the truth on most public forums. We already know about that. We've seen what they've done over the years. Another one, the World Health Organization should not be recognized as any type of authority. And that is true. This is why we want to stop it from taking over countries on the next pandemic, because that's what they want to do. I like this part. Dr. Anthony Fauci for prison 2024. I love this one. I was called a lunatic for refusing the jab. Turns out I'm not a lunatic at all. Instead, it was the government and all of those jab pushers who are the lunatics. I can think for myself. I think that's brilliant. And then you've got billions of dollars stolen from taxpayers for a product that murders them. If that's not pure evil, I don't know what is. And then we've got, we need those who push these poisons on people on trial. Another one, the WHO should be dismantled. This goes on and on. And there's another one. I have friends that still don't believe this is happening. They have their heads in the sand. And that is true. There's a lot of people that don't want to know about this because it's too horrifying to think, even to know that there could possibly be a bunch of globalists that want to start depopulating the planet. This comment is quite concerning, people. Whether it's true or not, that time will tell. But this is someone that says, I was at the ear, nose and throat specialist today. I am not jabbed and got an all clear on my throat, which was great news. But in talking to the doctors there, the word was the entire hospital was full of vax issues. The talk amongst them was that heart issues are through the roof, cancers have gone up 30% to date, and the long COVID clinics are packed with both COVID and jab victims. In talking to the ENT specialist, he said they are all jammed full of appointments and are seeing cancers in non-smokers and non-drinkers all under the age of 45. The first thing he asked me is how many COVID shots that I had had. I said none, and he answered that's the best number. They really are worried about cancers. That's really concerning, hearing that, if it's true, people. And here's a bit of a tidbit of knowledge. It says, this is another comment, this was done on to us on purpose, the WEF. Very nice. Now, just so you know, people, this is a very serious thing too. I'll read this comment and you make your own, assumption of what you think. And this is what it says. This is a comment. Honestly, Dr. Campbell, when you took the jab, I unsubscribed. He did. He did take the jab, people. However, after seeing that you were a man with a moral compass, and when you started seeing the evidence, you followed facts and not the science and did the proper thing. You not only got my subscription back, but my sincerest admiration. Thank you. That's what he did, people. He did get the jab. He was pro-jab in the beginning. And as he did the studying, he realized what was going on. Of course, he's not going to admit probably to a globalist takeover or anything like that, but he's telling you that something's dreadfully wrong. Another comment. This is another comment that says, last week, I visited a friend who has a job delivering parts for machines. He regularly visits a company that builds hearses and funeral companies. Told me the general manager was chatting with him as they needed to up quantities on some parts, and then said in the last few months they have seen a 150% increase in orders for funeral cars, and he had never seen anything like it in his 20 years at the company. Business is booming, he said. There you go. This is the reality of the world in these parts that understand that something's gone wrong. And another comment, this is a really good one, people. It says, this was never about science, medicine, and public health. It was an exercise in control. Absolutely on the ball. If they wanted to murder everyone, they could have done it. But this was about the beginning of that, where they need to get control of everyone through the QR coding. They now have everyone with their cards on their phones, with their QR coding on their phones, and even access to them via their phones. They now have the way to do the surveillance. This is the beginning of it. And on the subject of surveillance, with even mobile phones, now everyone has one, okay? You have to because of the pandemic. They made everybody get them. Even people that never really owned them before were told you better get them or you can't eat or go anywhere because you have to QR code. It was drummed into us for the last few years and most people have conformed. But you know what? The problem with the surveillance of the future with all these phones and all these EVs and all these things that are wired to the Internet of Things, they need something to power them and it's called a lithium battery. Now, Australia has very big... We're very big on lithium mining, okay? Most of the other countries, including China and the US, have stakes in our lithium mining. They make the batteries, they make the electric cars, they move this stuff around and they make the mobile phones. We just have the resources, as usual. Now, this story is about a growing problem that's going to get bigger and bigger. Why? Because they're trying to force people using the mobile phones, but also to get them out of their internal combustion engine car and into an electric vehicle. Now, it doesn't seem like a big deal. I see electric vehicles all the time, mostly Teslas. I see them all the time, and I'm actually getting used to them. I see e-bikes everywhere, which is annoying, but they're just everywhere all the time. So you just get used to it. Even the electric skateboards, I see them flying past, which is sort of amusing that everyone is doing this electrification, but they're not really doing any pedal pushing, which means they're not really getting any exercise. But that's another story. But this story is a little story, but it's a big story because it's going to get bigger. This came out abc.net.au and it says fire authorities warn of lithium-ion battery risks after two students narrowly escaped a Melbourne fire. Now remember, there's a lot of people that live in unit blocks and these sort of setups. And if someone takes it on themselves to, charge a mobile phone, we're all doing it. But in this case, there are more people doing than ever. So the incidence of a fire is greater. So it says here, and it came out 18th of April 2024. It says, Victorian fire authorities say they have been responding to almost, this is incredible, one lithium-ion battery fire every day. It says, in the wake of a dramatic blaze which threatened dozens of people in Melbourne's inner north. About 50 residents were forced to evacuate a Carlton student accommodation building on Thursday morning due to a fire sparked by an exploding lithium-ion battery. Fire authorities said two university students, you can bet they're overseas ones, were sleeping when a mobile phone power bank beside their bed exploded, quickly setting their bed alight because they overcharged it. This is how the e-scooters and the e-bikes are blowing up. They plug them in and then they forget about them like a mobile phone and think, oh, they'll be fine. What happens is that the battery becomes overcharged and the result is it explodes, which causes a fire. And it says, the fire was contained to one bedroom, but fire authorities said it caused a fair bit of damage. It says the room had been gutted by fire as a result of the explosion of that power bank, and they won't be able to reoccupy the room anytime soon. Fire Rescue Victoria's Commander Paul Eckhold said, if they hadn't have woken when the fire started, they could have easily been trapped in the apartment and died. And reading on, it says, the two students have been assessed for smoke inhalation but were released by Ambulance Victoria. Commander Eckhold said lithium-ion batteries were a growing concern for fire services, who are responding to almost one fire per day caused by lithium-ion batteries. He says, what we're finding is a lot of people are charging devices while they're asleep. And that's common, actually, people. Phones, computers, scooters, that type of thing, he said. Earlier this year, two people were killed in a house blaze authorities believe was caused by lithium-ion batteries in New South Wales. It says, Commander Eckhold said the frequency of the fires highlighted the need for working smoke detectors. We want to warn the community that absolutely working smoke alarms save lives, he said. We recommend that you have smoke detectors interconnected throughout your house and in your bedrooms. It's really, really important for people that when they are charging phones, lithium battery products, scooters, electric bikes, that they have a smoke detector operating and to make sure they supervise that. What's really interesting, in the US, a lot of the people that own electric vehicles are asking for charge-at-home chargers. In other words, ones that are set up in their own garage. And there was a fire that actually gutted the house when the occupants charge the car overnight, and exactly the same thing happened. So you can see that there are a lot of people out there not really thinking, okay? It's an educational thing. They need to be taught. The other thing is the smoke alarm. Very good idea. So it says here, not all battery products are up to Australian standards. This is another problem, people. Remember, all this stuff comes from China anyway. Leanne Hewson, Chief Executive Officer of Energy Safe Victoria, said it was important Australians bought lithium-ion battery products from reputable suppliers. Our very strong advice to consumers is to make sure you're buying batteries from reputable suppliers. Don't buy them from the internet when you don't know who the supplier is, she said. Now, these are students. They're university students from overseas. They don't care about what's in Australia. They're going to buy them online because it's cheaper. This is the problem. Other critical safety measures include ensuring devices are compatible with batteries, not overcharging devices and charging in a safe location. Be really careful about overcharging your device. Once it's at 100%, it's charged. You can take it off and unplug the charger, Ms. Houston said. See, a lot of people don't get that. If they're asleep, how do they know? Also, it says, make sure there is an escape route or that it's outside in the garage, that you're not blocked from getting out of the door if a fire does occur. That's how serious is this, people. You've got a plan just to charge your phone. It says, Ms. Houston also encouraged consumers to ensure their batteries were compliant with Australian standards. Look for what we call the regulatory compliance mark on those batteries, she said. If you see that on the battery that it's compliant with Australian standards, and you can have more confidence it's going to be a safer product. Doesn't matter what the product is. If you overcharge it, it can explode. That's the bottom line. And that story about the two people killed, that was only back in March, 5th of March 2024, abc.net.au. And the last story was also abc.net.au. Not sure if I did the date. I think I did, but I'll just say it again. So you can see how close these events are. 18th of April 2024 was the first story. And now it says on this, two killed in New South Wales house blaze, believed to be state's first recorded lithium-ion battery-related deaths, Fire and Rescue New South Wales says. This is a reality, people. Two people killed in Lake Macquarie house fire last week appear to be the state's first casualties from a lithium-ion battery-related blaze, Fire and Rescue New South Wales says. The fire began about 4:10 a.m. last Thursday inside the property. Two of the occupants escaped the blaze, but two others inside the townhouse at Taralba were killed. Their bodies were recovered from the ruins on Friday and Saturday. This is a real thing happening in Australia. It says, Fire New South Wales Acting Assistant Commissioner Terry Farley said fire inspectors found remnants of the battery at the scene. Fire New South Wales investigated the fire and we've determined that a lithium-ion battery was the cause of the fire, he said. Commissioner Farley said these are the first deaths associated with the batteries. Sadly, yes, unfortunately, lithium-ion battery fires across the planet have increased in the past couple of years. We recently received information from the US about the increase in the number of lithium-ion batteries in their country, he said. Now, this is the first time we have seen fatalities caused by a lithium-ion fire. Now, remember, what's on the bottom of an EV, electric vehicle? A one-ton lithium-ion battery. You do not want to overcharge that one, people. And as I reported with the BYDs coming, the Chinese electric cars, they've also got the same thing on the bottom. Compliant to Australian standards, of course, but there you go. My horror story is when two EVs collide head-on with a massive explosion. That's going to be the big one. But people don't get it. They don't understand that they think it's safer and greener, but it's actually not. It's actually the opposite. The reason they want you in an EV, and most people not, is just so they can track and survey you, just like the phones. The car just becomes a giant tracking device for them. That's what it is. And it says here, fire caused after the battery entered thermal runaway. Now, I think I've already done this story on podcast before, but still, the bottom line is that it gives off toxic gases after it explodes. So it's not just a normal fire like you think. Oh, just smoke. They're toxic gases. That's what kills you. So be aware these batteries are not to be mucked about with, okay? Seriously. A lot of people take them for granted. It's a device that can kill you if you don't look after it properly, okay? And my advice is to go back to the flip phones. The little tiny ones with tiny batteries in them are less of a problem than these great big phones that now start to resemble iPads. They're going to have to make bigger pockets in people's pants just to fit these bigger phones in all the time. It's just ridiculous. It's a phone, people. That's all it is. It's not a staring device to give you neck pain when you're older from looking down all the time. It's actually just a phone, and you should treat the real world with the respect that it deserves by looking up and around. Even this snippet from the petition about the cash petition about saving cash, there's a tiny snippet here I saved that just says something about the phones. It says, the COVID pandemic accelerated Australia's transition to a cashless economy, as has the growth in mobile wallets. Over 4 years to 2022, the value of transactions using mobile wallets has risen from $750 million to $93 billion. And it says, so there you go. This is that's just a snippet from the, I'll go to the widget now and we'll just have a look at it. But still, this is what's this is the one that says save cash. And in the shop, I always tell people, use it or lose it, use it or lose it. It's a very big deal for me because I can see it on the ground with what they're talking about, these mobile wallets. They're everywhere, people. It seems to be, unfortunately, what people are doing because they're being driven to it. Exactly my point. Okay, so it's an Australian cash and banking guarantee, and it's got 175,000 people. I'm just seeing if there's an update because there might be an update on that. But that's a snippet from that site. It's a change.org petition. It's got here, no, it doesn't have any more updates. It says here the Commonwealth Bank wants to ban cash transactions over $500. But we're not surprised by that, people. This is a bank which is then beholden to the globalist major shareholder market. And they've been dictated to anyway from above. So there's no surprises there. And just another snippet here, people. This is about the dumb phone, not the smartphone. This is someone commenting on the flip phones, because that's what I've got. I've got a flip phone. I've just got to get a prepaid SIM card for it, and I'll start using it. But it says, it has helped me with my mental health and has made my day-to-day life much more interesting. I can finally force myself to be productive or read a book, just anything outside of technology. I feel freer using a dumb phone. Anyway, there it is. And here's food for thought. abc.net.au came out on 7th of February 2024. It says, as mobile phone use rises, some Australians are switching from smartphones to dumb phones. This is great. It says they make up only a tiny portion of Australia's mobile phone market, but dumb phones, also known as feature phones, they used to call them burners too, people didn't want to be tracked, criminals, all sorts of people, the government. People would just use these phones and they could throw them away, but because they're not expensive. But now they're flip phones and we need them to get away from the criminals and the government. So it says, Reading on, are being adopted by people looking to cut down on their screen time, find focus, and even save some money. Well, that's one reason. Smartphones allow us to do a lot of creative and personal tasks, but for some, they are linked to everything from social media and gaming addiction to expensive data bills, reduced attention spans, and even loneliness. There are also people gambling on them too, people. A 2019 study found problem mobile phone use in Australia had increased since 2005. Well, obviously, with more people feeling lost without their devices or experiencing problems such as loss of sleep. That's true. You get nomophobia. You lose your mobile and see how you feel, people, till you can't find it. You will start to get the shakes. You'll get heart palpitations. It's called nomophobia. It's an actual condition. It's a real thing. Anyway, it says, the study found women and those aged between 18 and 24 exhibited the most problematic mobile phone use. But older age groups also saw an increase in such issues. It says, it means that for some Australians, their mobile phone use has become such an issue that they've turned back the clock to a simpler time when old school flip and brick phones ruled the market. It says Sydney University student Ariana Lahiri switched from an iPhone to a second-hand Japanese flip phone towards the end of 2023. It cost her around $250. The 19-year-old said she was inspired by the revival of 90s and noughties fashion trends, the renewed popularity of flip phones, and a desire to spend less time on her main device. See, I don't know about you people, but the phone, the iPhone, whatever you've got, they're huge. They sit in your pocket and you know they're there. But a little flip phone, once it's folded up, you barely even notice. That's the best thing about them. They're a phone. That's the main reason they were invented. They're a mobile phone. Anyway, reading on. It says, it was doom scrolling on TikTok that really got me, she says. I would get stuck there and wouldn't be able to feel time move around me. I realized this one night when I was going to go to bed. I said to myself, okay, 10 more minutes, then bedtime. It turned into 3 hours and I didn't notice at all. And that is so true, people. It's a bit like the early days of YouTube, where you would just go and look for something on YouTube that you were actually looking for, and then you would end up looking at something completely different for hours and hours, and it just sent you on a goose chase nowhere. That's so true. That's just exactly what the devices do as well, because they're full of apps, and you're looking this way and that way, but you're not looking in reality. You're looking in the ethernet. You're looking at you're talking on a text or to people. You're not actually really conversing in the real world. You're actually just talking to a device to them. Whereas you could be actually standing in front of them. I mean, they made the joke that two people were texting each other and they were standing next to each other. I laugh, but it's not really that funny because it's actually true. So it says here, Ms. Lahiri said she tried deleting apps from her smartphone to prevent her from using it, but it never lasted long. See, I don't use apps, people, at all. I'm not part of Planet of the Apps. And it's really easy. In the early days when I first got the phones, yes, I was looking at apps for guitar tuners, all sorts of apps I used. The phone was clogged with them. And, of course, the battery life would be less. Lots of other things started to occur. And then it did occur to me that, hang on, I don't need this. I used to have external devices to do all these things. I don't need everything on a magical wand, because that's what they're trying to make you feel like, some sort of magician. But you're not. You're being utterly controlled by these digital apps. It's the third parties. It's all the information gathering that these devices cause. That's what it's for. It's an internet device, so it's going to have those capabilities. And it says here, she said switching to a dumb phone meant she wasn't tempted to use her device. It's a phone. And was speaking to friends over the phone more often instead of just messaging him. That's the big point. You actually hear someone at the other end. How many times have you texted people and thought, are they really at the other end? Is that the person that's getting the text? If you never thought that, start thinking that, because you can't hear them. You don't know who you're talking to really, just who's holding the device at the time, all right? It's a big deal. People don't understand this is a tracking device for the future. That's what it's designed to do. That's why when QR coding was introduced, everyone jumped on it. They never thought twice that in a pandemic, you would have to use it or you would not be able to eat or go anywhere. That's how serious this got. And actually, this story rolls into the one I mentioned before about the flip phones. They're the same story. But anyway, it says, she said her Switch had received a positive response from friends, family, and even strangers. She says, I was out of the goth club with a bunch of people, and they were like, a flip phone? And they took photos of me with it. It was fun, she says. And then it goes on to say what I said before about it helped me with my mental health, made my day-to-day life much more interesting. It says here, Sydney-sider Davis Sorora said using a smartphone helped him with his marketing business, but says his dumb phone allows him to be in the moment when he's not at work. And this is a really good point too, people. You can use the dumb phone as a way of not being bugged by what I'm about to say. He says, I found that the smartphone notifications and constantly being accessible to people made it very difficult to focus, he said. I felt like I was constantly on call and answerable to all different people and expected to respond to messages instantly. You know what I do, people? I'm not using the flip yet, but I will. At the moment, my phone, even now, stays in airplane mode. No one can access me. They can send me an email or a message like a text, and I'll look at the phone when I turn it on periodically, but I don't have it sitting there making me accessible to anybody all the time. Seriously, if it's an emergency, they can ring the home number. I've got a home number with an answering machine. If they're friends, they'll know it. So that's basically it. And it says, finishing off that story, it says, I feel freer using a dumb phone. I find there's a lot more clarity. Mr. Sorora said he had tried switching his smartphone screen to black and white and restricting the number of apps on his device, but he needed more of a barrier. And this is exactly right. I needed to get a phone that's not sexy, and that's why I purposely went for a flip phone, he says. Good on him. I don't like flip phones at all, but just to have the additional friction, you've got to open it up and use it, it's not sexy. You don't carry it everywhere. That friction is really important for me. The device as well as the software is part of the problem for me anyway. Both Ms. Lahiri and Mr. Sora pointed out that dumb phones can't do everything. Some can't scan QR codes. I'm going to read that again, people. Some can't scan QR codes. And some can't run specific apps that might sometimes need to use. Mr. Sorora said switching to using a dumb phone outside of work, that's really important, people, had been a very difficult journey, which had impacted some of his relationships, and he was less accessible to people on messaging apps. Good. Friends look at you a bit strangely. They don't really understand, and they think you're a bit weird, which I totally get. Smartphones are incredible, and giving them up does feel a bit stupid at times, but there's a lot more clarity as a result, he says. I feel a lot freer. I feel like my brain functions better. Without the distractions and notifications, it's much easier to focus, and I'm more productive. Isn't that interesting, people? It's more like a sedative, a smartphone. Even in my personal life, he says, I feel like I'm able to do more in the moment and not consumed in the phone. And it's got dumb phone searches rise, but few Australians switch. Because that's because we're sheeple people. I actually read in the comments of that last one with Dr. John Campbell that it said there are so many two-legged sheep in Australia. I did laugh when I saw that. But it says here, Google search data shows searches for information on dumb phones rose worldwide over the past few years. Funny that. According to software firm Semrush, searches for devices jumped by 89% between 2018 and 2021. It's because no one wanted the QR code. That's what that would have been. Videos about dumb phones and retro devices also clocked up hundreds of thousands of views on TikTok, where more than a third of the audience is aged between 18 and 24. That's a big deal, people. That means young people are switched on. They know, because they're the ones we think are going to not adopt. So it says here, and you can see it on the chart, you can see the pandemic starting and you can see the rise of the inquiries for dumb phones, and it just goes through the roof, people. It says Australian technology analyst firm Telsyte said just under 1 million Australians were still using dumb phones as feature phones in 2023. That's one in 26 people. So that's a big deal. Alvin Lee, a senior analyst in the company, says the number is declining, really, due to the increasing availability of affordable smartphones in the sub 200 range. Oh, cheap Chinese ones, just like the cars, eh, people? And because most mobile plans now include data. Mr. Lee says, while there is a growing interest in dumb phones among millennials and Generation X in the United States, due to a digital detox trend in 22 to 23, they haven't made a true comeback in Australia. Two-thirds of the Australian 16 to 34-year-olds we surveyed said that smartphones remain their primary digital device. Telsyte's research found feature phones are most popular among seniors in Australia, with over half of the users aged above 65. Feature phones appeal to seniors as they are easy to use, more durable with longer battery life. So that's so true, people, and cost-effective for everyday basic use. It's a phone. And it says dumb phone sales are on the decline globally, but dedicated dumb phone companies have also entered the market. Firms like Punct and Lite make phones with intentionally limited functionality. Lite even says its devices are designed to be used as little as possible. That's so funny. It says industry researcher Karanjit Kaur from the International Data Corporation says a number of companies have introduced something like a smart feature phone, which offers a little more than texting and voice calling capabilities the traditional feature phones do. So it's creeping into the smartphone, is it? These have got some traction in the emerging markets where the price point makes them more attractive than a smartphone. So it's like a mini smartphone, I'd say. Mr. Kerr says feature phones still hold quite a significant share of the market in some emerging economies, especially in South Asia, the Middle East, and Africa, largely due to their cheaper price point. For example, the average price of a smartphone in India is around US $250, which is $383 here, while you can get feature phones for less than US $20, $31, she says. Although there are smartphones starting from US $50, which is $77 here, even though those are more than twice the price of a feature phone. So it says price is also a factor for some Australians amid the current cost of living crisis, including Miss Lahiri. I would 100% recommend a dumb phone to people who want to get away from social media and be more awake to the world around them, she says. It's also cheaper than a modern phone, so you can always give it a try without breaking the bank. So true, people. Okay, people, I'm at the end of the podcast. I'm going to have to go because I need to get to bed. And it's not that late, but I'm just absolutely tired and the Nurofen's wearing off. So it's time to clock out, and hopefully I can get over this COVID thing, and I'll report next week on how I recovered. But it's a flu, people. It's turning into what's called a flu, where you get knocked about and then you bounce back. It's a virus. We need to prepare ourselves for the future, because they are going to introduce another pandemic with another type of viral infection. You know now what to do. Don't take the jab. Trust in your gut feeling. Okay, people, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Sunday, the 21st of April, 2024. Thanks for listening. Over and out.